Hi, everybody. Okay, so you've heard a little bit about Long Island and the suburbs and the sort of bigger picture. And so my presentation is going to focus a little bit more on a specific health issue. I'm going to be talking about obesity, weight perception, and weight intention among sixth grade students in one of these communities that was highlighted, one of our segregated suburban communities. And I as well have no relationships to disclose. So I'm going to start by just talking about some of the things that everybody in this room, I'm sure, already knows, this issue of childhood obesity and the fact that childhood obesity rate has risen over the last 30 years, and that it primarily affects Hispanic and African American children. The consequences of childhood obesity have physical effects, whereas it has to do with type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, and also it has mental effects in terms of negative behaviors and depression and mental health issues. When it comes within that area of childhood obesity, though, we also know that how children, the children or the adolescents that are affected by these being overweight or obese is also important. So how do children perceive themselves? How do they perceive themselves as being overweight or obese? And so research tells us that accurate perception by child is important in terms of being able to ameliorate this issue. But unfortunately, when children are asked to perceive their weight, many overweight children, and particularly teens, are incorrect in accurately assessing whether or not they are overweight or obese. And in addition, parents are also, unfortunately, not very helpful in being able to identify that their children are overweight and obese. And you can imagine that this can present a barrier in terms of actually being able to get help. So, you know, if they say the idea the first step is being able to recognize the problem, we are in a situation with childhood obesity for some where just the recognition or the accurate recognition of the issue is a barrier. One of the other barriers that we have in Nassau County, as you've heard, is an issue of residential segregation. And this is a rather complex story, but really kind of comes down to the idea that different people were only allowed in the 1950s, in particular, where we had the biggest growth in Nassau County. Nassau County is home to Levittown, which is one of the sort of quintessential suburban areas that happened during the post-war era. And we do know that places like Levittown had restricted covenants that said who could move into those communities. And unfortunately, we are living with the consequences of that residential segregation in Nassau County, and I want to suggest that that's one of the reasons why we see many of these health disparities that my colleagues have just talked about, in addition to the idea of the disparities in childhood obesity. Overall, we know that residential segregation is known as one of the fundamental causes of health disparities nationwide. We know that segregated black neighborhoods also have fewer outlets for healthy eating and exercise, and overall the conditions that are linked to residential segregation help to constrain healthy behaviors and encourage unhealthy behaviors to cope with stressors. So the idea of eating or smoking or doing other things that are unhealthy to mitigate the stress of living in a segregated neighborhood, research has found that that is increased. So I'm going to show you, we're going to talk about one of these neighborhoods that, as you can see, is, so here's again is our map of Nassau County, and this is looking at our percentage of our populations that are black, non-Hispanic, and you can see in the darker green areas are where we have our populations that are over 10%, but I also want to draw your attention to those yellowish areas where the population of black, non-Hispanics are under 0.6%. So clearly in this map, you can sort of see this area, again, this sort of legacy of residential segregation that still exists in Nassau County. And the area that we're going to be focusing on, or that I focused on for looking at childhood obesity, is an area called Roosevelt that's right in that corridor of color, as Dr. Buckman mentioned. And so this idea of the residential segregation is sort of the larger lens I want you to think about as we're talk about the research that we did. So what we did is we looked at sixth graders who go to the middle school over a six-month period, and we measured their heights and their weights. We also gave them surveys where we used questions from the YRBS, the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, to assess their nutrition and physical activity. We also then, with their measured height and weights, we were able to determine their exact BMIs and to be able to see where they fit in terms of the percentiles for being overweight or obese. And the surveys and their BMIs were anonymous, but we were able through codes to link the answers that they gave to the survey questions with their actual BMI. So with that, we were then able to determine within the BMI, again, the weight status, normal, underweight, normal, overweight, or obese. With those variables then, we were also looked at something, so we were interested, right, to be able to see whether or not students were accurately able to perceive their weight. And so we determined this as concordant or discordant. So we had their actual BMIs, we knew if they were overweight or obese, and we asked them questions to say, how would you describe yourself? Are you overweight, obese, normal size? And so we were able to match that to see whether or not they had concordant or discordant perceptions of themselves. We then did analyses to be able to find out what are some of the reasons or the differences between people who were accurately perceiving their weight, and also we looked at, through the survey, other variables that might have affected that. So this slide shows you some of the just the overall differences. So again, we did this study over 2 years and then we aggregated it. But one of the things I just want to draw your attention to certainly is the idea that we have, at least in 2013, 26% of the students, sixth grade students, were overweight, 31% were obese. And I compare that to the New York City and the rest of Nassau County. So as my colleagues just mentioned, the idea that there are these differences in health outcomes in Nassau County. It's also true for childhood obesity, where the overall obesity rate is about 19% and it's 31% in this neighborhood, the school that we're looking at. And similarly, even for New York City, we see that our school has a higher rate of or higher percentage of children who are obese. So again, this idea that there are the suburbs might not be what we think about them in terms of health outcomes, and in particular, certain parts of the suburbs. So thinking about that idea of the concordant and discordant ideas of their weight, we interestingly saw that many of the students were actually pretty aligned with what they were accurately perceived their weight. And so this was true pretty much across race ethnicity. I should also note that when you see the race ethnicity of the school, you see that the school is primarily African American and Latino. It's about a 60-40 mix there. So again, the idea of this residential segregation affecting the who is at the school. And again, students who were overweight were able to be able to determine that. We also asked students, what do they want to do? Do you want to stay the same? Do you want to try to lose weight? Or do you want to try to gain weight? And with this, we also saw that the students who accurately perceived themselves as being overweight were actually interested in trying to lose weight. However, when we then ask them questions about their habits, about what they do, so again, the idea that who was trying to lose weight, you see bolded there that the in that top in the top table that students who are overweight were overwhelmingly and statistically significant that those students were the ones who wanted to lose weight. Or should I say, were trying to lose weight. Unfortunately, when we asked them about what they were doing, we found that students were doing unhealthy behaviors to be able to lose weight. So when we asked them if they fasted to lose weight, we saw that those students who were overweight were, again, statistically significantly different from those other students in terms of trying to fast to lose weight. And similarly, skipping breakfast is something that we saw that the students who were trying to lose weight did that was statistically significantly different from those who were not trying to lose weight. And so, again, this led us to this idea that this group who accurately perceive themselves as being overweight or obese and who want to do something about it are unfortunately not doing it in healthy ways. So again, when it comes to doing this, one of the things we have to remember is that these are sixth graders, right? So these are sixth graders who are 12, 13 years old, and or I should say 11, 12 years old. And so when we think about this, we have to think that these are students who their agency in terms of being able to try and lose weight is relatively limited, right? So when we thought about that in looking at them skipping breakfast, we saw that as a way to try to lose weight, we saw that made some sense to the extent that this was something that was within their control. Again, understanding that there are also other reasons why children don't eat breakfast. Certainly the idea that we saw that was different from the literature is that our students who are primarily Latino and African American did accurately perceive their weight, which is different from the literature, but that literature primarily sees children who are teens as African Americans and Latinos are discordant with their weight, and so we think that this might have something to do with increased social awareness as they get older. And the idea is that even though these students, again, were overweight and obese, we did see high rates of them consuming sugar-sweetened beverages and low, high sedentary lifestyle. So again, this idea that they want to do this, they are interested in being able to lose weight, but are limited in terms of the things that are available to them. We also found this idea that the school would be a very powerful way to be able to influence these differences and to try to implement changes from a school level. Certainly the idea that, as we all know, children spend a lot of time in school, so to be able to implement those changes on that perspective, we thought was something that would be hopefully effective. And also this idea, when we think about the relationship between place and health, as we've been talking about today, when we look at something like childhood obesity, the suburbs also need to be considered as having similar problems. So what I just said certainly can sound similar to when we talk about the South Bronx in terms of children having limited access to being able to exercise outside or to feel to have access to healthier foods. So one of the things we want to suggest is that we are seeing similar outcomes, and in fact, as you saw, we have higher rates of childhood obesity than New York City in this area. So this idea of the need to acknowledge suburban health inequities and is important, as Jessica mentioned, in terms of funding and just acknowledgement. So we certainly see this idea of recognizing the suburbs as a place where we do have an increased need, and as we see the changes happening in the suburbs, increased immigration, higher rates of poverty, that this is something that we see, unfortunately, that might be continuing. And so I'm going to sort of end by thinking about this idea of this concept over doing this work. We still work with this middle school and working with them, with the faculty, working with the administration, and also working with the students and the families to be able to understand, how are we going to fix this? How are we going to try and make some of these changes? And certainly this idea of just acknowledging that we have this as a problem is one of the main things that we've come to understand. Because one of the things that we see is that when it comes to suburban health inequity, oftentimes people in the suburbs are sort of stuck in the middle, right? So from the outside, people see these higher income suburbs as having better health outcomes and having better health overall. But from the inside of those suburban communities, specifically with inside our segregated suburban communities, we have these higher level of health disparities that oftentimes are on par with cities. And this being stuck really sort of makes us feel that there is a need certainly for acknowledgement that there are these issues, in addition to the ability to work harder to be able to ameliorate them. And I think that what we are looking at is this idea of collaboration. And certainly I can say that in the time since we've done this study, that we really are seeing an increased collaboration among community-based organizations, as I mentioned, with the school and the people in the community. So we hope that this is something that continues. So that's all I got. Thank you.